I do think the basics here are still very good, but we do need to become more attractive to more foreign-born workforces.
Germany has long been touted as Europe's economic powerhouse, but its performance recently has fallen short.
It is not looking good. Over the last 5 years, we had basically zero growth. We had complete stagnation at a time where in the US we have experienced 12% growth, and even the rest of Europe around 4%. So Germany is really lagging behind right now and not deserving the title of the European powerhouse. My name is Ulrike Malmendier. I'm a professor here at UC Berkeley, both at the Haas School of Business and in the economics department. And I'm also serving on the German Council of Economic Experts that advises the German government.
Malmendier is also a co-author with Claudia Schaffronke of Making Germany Grow Again, published in the June issue of Finance and Development magazine. Journalist Rhoda Metcalf spoke with Malmendier about Germany's current predicament.
We're living in a period where many countries are very focused on building up their homegrown manufacturing base. So it seems almost counterintuitive that Germany, with its powerful manufacturing sector, is struggling now economically. So what's going on?
Yeah, indeed. In fact, when in many countries the share of manufacturing to GDP was declining, in Germany it kept going strong and was continuing to be able to sell to the world as a world-class product until about 2018-19, I would say. And since then, we have started to see the declines.
So what's changed? I mean, Germany is also very well known for having a technologically skilled workforce. And yet, labor has now become a big problem there, right?
Well, I wouldn't give up on our technologically skilled workforce. I think Germany is still doing great in providing the education and training to have excellent technicians who also adapt to new technologies. But you are also right that labor is the big problem. We are a society that is aging very, very fast. We have a very low fertility rate, and that is felt now in the economy. In fact, firms often don't dare let people go even when they don't need them because they're so worried whether they can rehire them when they will need them. And so that this so-called labor hoarding has the effect then that, of course, the cost of production are much higher or the labor productivity is much, much lower.
Right. Because you also mentioned in your paper that one of the problems with labor has been that people, workers tend to be reluctant to move between industries more so perhaps than in other countries.
I mean, Germany has a tradition of, you know, people working at big companies, particularly these big manufacturing or other big industrial companies, and possibly, you know, experiencing their whole career.
It's a company loyalty.
Yeah, there's company loyalty. There's also the German model of capitalism is a little bit different than in other countries. There's a social element to it. And there are many good aspects to that. Low worker turnover has many good aspects to it. But if you're living in a time where in order to generate growth, you need to open up to new technologies, different ideas, risky ideas, which might come out of smaller firms, well, you might need to change your skill set and you might need to also change where you are physically. And that is not so much our tradition. It comes with the additional baggage of being a country that doesn't have a good tradition of attracting high-skilled immigrants to come to our country. That's how many other countries were able to counterbalance the demographic aging.
Sure.
And we have just not so much this tradition. I mean, the situation would be worse if we hadn't had so much immigration, in particular from other European countries. Now, those European countries are facing the same demographic aging problem we are facing.
Right.
And I think we can't bet on it anymore and need to put a strong effort into attracting a labor force to Germany, which is foreign-born.
I have read that public sentiment in Germany towards immigrants have complicated attracting immigrant workers into the country. Do you think that that is a factor?
Oh, yeah, I think that is absolutely a factor. I also think the Germans aren't alone with that. Part of the issue here is that the word migration and immigration mixes all sorts of aspects together, right? And complicates it to, if any politician tries to put forward a proposal, we need to focus on attracting more workforce to Germany, immediately these sentiments come up, as they do in other countries. Right. Which is, by the way, why I think a lot of politicians emphasize we're looking for a highly skilled workforce, kind of try to draw that distinction. But, you know, if we're completely honest, we need people willing to work at any level, highly skilled, not highly skilled, not skilled at all. We just don't have enough people who are providing the services and participating in production.
So is the problem that it's difficult for the government to get people behind the idea of having more immigration, or is the problem that these highly skilled immigrants are reluctant to come to Germany because of the public sentiment?
I would add a third one, which is for me actually the main issue. You know, we Germans tend to be very thorough in checking whether your degree is truly adequate and comparable to the German degree. And that can take forever. It can be complicated and is a key variable we have to change. So making it easier to come to Germany and work there is, for me, the number one aspect.
Right. So beyond the workforce, there's also this question of the money side, the investment side. You point out in your paper that Germany has a scarcity of investment capital. So why is that?
Among other things, it is because we have a very good banking system, which has been an excellent provider of money to fund investments in the traditional industries, right? Think you mentioned manufacturing, you know, automobile, chemicals, machinery, etc. They are our traditional bank-based system works beautifully. Everything is great.
Right.
Now, in a time where we need to open up, if we want to ever have growth again, where we need to open up to new technologies, whether it's in the biosciences, whether it's AI or more general digital IT, then a lot of that is more in the startup phase, in the younger phase, or maybe in the scale-up phase, but still high risk. That is traditionally funded differently. It's funded through the capital market, venture capital. And capital markets in Europe and in particular in Germany are highly underdeveloped relative to the US, for example. And one of the reasons is we didn't have so much the need. I would personally think another reason is the whole population doesn't kind of see the capital market as an important component. If you start in individual households as a place where I put my money to invest and save, I rather put it on a savings account. And we have to get out of that equilibrium and build up a new socialization, cultural change in terms of our attitude towards the stock market and capital markets more broadly.
You pointed out in your paper that other countries have overcome this problem. I mean, how did they do it?
Well, the usual trick, which I would love to apply in Germany, but so far it's not working, has been the moment when governments started capital market-based retirement savings accounts. So here in the US, we have the 401ks. There's a longer tradition of that. But several European countries, like Sweden, famously a couple of years ago, also induced by the demographic aging we talked about.
Right.
As these countries have made the transition to giving people individual accounts where money is invested broadly in the stock market, and, you know, there's some couple of selection of suitable funds, then in the end you pick, all right, I take this broadly diversified low-fee fund. It's kind of made relatively easy for you. Then you start putting your contributions for pensions in there, and you see over a year, over 2 years, maybe you didn't pay a lot of attention, but then after 5 years, you look what has happened with the money you put there, and you see, whoa, those returns are so much better than what I get on a, you know, fixed income kind of vehicle. Right. And people feel it, the experience that this is not as risky, not as scary as we thought. And my bet is there will be barely anybody who will not want that.
So is that on the horizon at all in Germany?
Well, as far as the reform of the pension system is concerned, the current coalition negotiation and the resulting coalition contract did not make me very happy. I saw instead a recommitment to the pre-existing kind of pay-as-you-go system. But I discovered the paragraph below that, which is something they are calling early start retirement saving now, which is more or less one-for-one a proposal my team and I have made at the Council of Economic Advisors about getting the youth involved in learning what it means to broadly diversify. So we had made the proposal the government should give kids when they enter elementary school 10 euros per month for 12 years and ensure that people invest in broadly diversified funds. They have 12 years to realize what it means to do this. They have account already set up. And so I'm having high hopes that at least this cultural shift toward an understanding that we should invest in capital markets and how will come if it gets truly implemented. The contract says that they want to implement it 1st of January 2026. It's not big enough to really make a huge difference, but I think it might be a starting point for us to open up to a different view of capital markets and hopefully ultimately help also with the cultural shift to new technologies, startup, scale-ups, etc. That's the hope. It's admittedly somewhat longer term than maybe we need in Germany. We need that too, but we also need something now.
Right. Well, that's a hopeful sign if it goes forward. So, I mean, another big factor in terms, I guess, of the competitiveness of Germany has been energy prices, right? I mean, energy prices in Germany are high. Are they higher than neighboring countries?
So it is indeed the case that German companies are still paying on average more than they were paying before the energy crisis. And already before the energy crisis, we were not looking great compared to our neighbors who maybe have more direct access to certain renewables. You know, we haven't been the best at leveraging the access to solar and wind.
Right.
We could have, right? Instead of having debates back and forth how much electric vehicles we want and don't want and having regulations that make it extremely hard to build wind parks, we just didn't go in. Right. We didn't go all in. And, you know, there's the question about nuclear energy, which is a path we didn't go down. I would also want to emphasize that we haven't put enough emphasis on maximizing the supply of energy at the right place. So rather than thinking about how to help companies who are dealing with these high energy prices and what we can subsidize, to have decidedly more effort on thinking about how to connect north and south in terms of flow of electricity.
Right.
It would be so much better if we jointly decide how do we maximize for all of Europe. And of course, they have to have then flow some payments to counterbalance. Some countries might be giving more than others, but that could be such an asset. And also from a geostrategic perspective, so helpful to make sure that Europe is really on the safe side, able to provide the energy companies need to be attractive as a market, as a production site. And that has fallen short. And I so hope that we will use the current crisis to also, you know, combine efforts across EU member states to push forward with a joint plan rather than just asking Germany versus France versus Spain, et cetera.
Right. So, I mean, what do you think the solution is? What does Germany need to do to pull itself back into being a more dynamic economy?
I do think the basics here are still very good, like having, you know, a university system and the system of Max Planck Institutes and Fraunhofer Institutes that take the latest technical knowledge, engineering knowledge, and trying to put it into practice, connect with firms. This is pretty awesome and pretty unique, and I hope we can continue to leverage that. We do need to become more attractive to more foreign-born workforce.
So how do you do that? How do you make it more attractive?
Yeah, so like for starters, making it easier to come to Germany and work there. You know, we had some good ideas. We have implemented in Germany this special rules for people coming from the West Balkan, where we basically allowed people who had a job offer from a German company to come in and start working under really, you know, with rapid processing of all the bureaucracy.
Right.
That worked really well. And it's a market-based approach where no bureaucrat decides whether or not this person will be a valuable member of the labor force in Germany. It's the market who decides, the entrepreneur who's willing to pay the money to get them to come here and to employ them. And I think extending that, both for longer duration, but also thinking about what other countries might be compatible with our system. And I think the outgoing government was on a path to do that. They had this growth initiative they were trying to implement at the very end. I very much hope the new government can continue along those lines, although unfortunately I didn't see it mentioned in the coalition contract. So that's number one. Number two, openness to new technologies. We need to make it easy to people who are trying to go for the new, riskier, AI-based or, you know, new advanced biosciences type of products and technologies. So that will be really important. And then last, I do want to mention the European Union again. I mean, particularly in this day and age where, you know, we talk every day about tariffs and whether global trade is fundamentally changed forever. Well, the EU was created because it was supposed to be this harbor of safety where we get together with other countries, where we don't have to worry about, you know, trade wars and kind of hostile actions. We want to make those countries hang together as a really smooth one big market, removing all the frictions to be attractive for companies to produce there and sell there. Is really important. We are supposed to have a common market, but there's still lots of indirect frictions because of regulations, country-specific regulations. Let's get rid of all of that. Same on the capital market side. So let's have a true capital market union where an investor can invest in the Netherlands and France and in easy ways, flow across borders. So right now it is the moment where, I mean, the pain level is high and the benefits of doing it are really tangible.
Do you see any signs this is a direction that both Germany and other countries in the EU are moving towards?
I'm having some hopes. Yes. So I'm involved in initiatives. I talk with people across different countries. And I think a lot more than even just 2 years ago, I hear that being their number one theme they have in front of their eyes. I just hope we don't lose momentum. There is the risk that we all get distracted with domestic politics and look very inward. I hope it won't be the case. I hope we will look at it as a European community and push ahead as that. Otherwise, you know, we won't play a role between US, China. I mean, we will just be like somewhere in between, have to fall in line. If we Europeans want to play our own role, we have to push ahead in harmonizing and growing together.
Well, it will be fascinating to see where both Germany and European integration goes from here. Ulrike Malmandier, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. It's been great.
Thank you so much for having me. That was a great conversation. I really enjoyed it.
Again, that was economist Ulrike Malmandier speaking with journalist Rhoda Metcalf. Look for her latest article on this topic in the June edition of Finance and Development magazine. Go to imf.org/FND. And look for more IMF podcasts wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow us on X. Our handle is @IMF_podcast. I'm Bruce Edwards.
And I'm Rhoda Metcalf.
Thanks for listening.